Good morning. The Secretary General will present the annual report and then he'll be very happy to take your questions. Secretary General.
Good morning. It is a great pleasure to launch my annual report for 2018. The report shows that NATO continues to modernize, with Europe and North America doing more together than ever before for our shared security. Responding to the challenges of today, adapting to the challenges of tomorrow, and investing in the future. At the Brussels summit in July, we took more than 100 decisions to strengthen our alliance. In 2018, we strengthened our deterrence and defence, including with a new readiness initiative. We agreed a major update of the NATO command structure with two new commands, one for the Atlantic and another to support military mobility in Europe. We carried out Trident Juncture 2018, NATO's largest exercise in a generation. We boosted our cyber defences, including with the Cyberspace Operation Centre. We stood united in calling out Russia for its use of a nerve agent on British soil and its breach of the INF Treaty. We stepped up in the fight against terrorism with a new training mission in Iraq and more support for Afghanistan. We deepened our partnerships from Ukraine and Georgia to Jordan and Tunisia. We worked more closely than ever before with the European Union, including on maritime security and military mobility. We invited North Macedonia to become a member of the alliance, showing that NATO's door remains open. We completed the move to this new headquarters, a modern home for a modern alliance. And at our July summit in Brussels, we agreed there is a new urgency to ensure fairer burden sharing across the alliance. All allies have stopped the cuts. All allies have started to increase. Last year, European allies and Canada increased their defence spending by almost 4% in real terms. Since 2016, they have actually spent an extra $41 billion on defence, and we expect that figure to rise to $100 billion by the end of next year. You can find the specific national figures for each country in the report. When it comes to capabilities, 25 allies spent more in real terms on major equipment last year than in the previous one. This includes investments in fighter aircraft, helicopters, tanks, missile defense, and drones. Allies are also stepping up their contributions to NATO deployments, with more than 20,000 troops serving from Afghanistan to Iraq and Kosovo to the Baltic countries and Poland. So we face a paradox. At a time when some are questioning the strength of the transatlantic bond, we are actually doing more together in more ways and in more places than ever before. Because we live in an unpredictable world, NATO's unity is more important than ever. As we mark the 70th anniversary of this alliance this year, we must continue to stand strong and stand together. NATO foreign ministers will meet next month in Washington, and our heads of state and government will meet in London in December. These will be opportunities to celebrate seven decades of peace and prosperity, and to look to the future. Our world is changing, and NATO is changing with it. But our commitment to one and another endures. For 70 years, we have worked together to prevent conflict and preserve peace. And standing with unity and resolve, NATO will remain a pillar of stability for generations to come. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay, we'll start with Washington Post over there, third row.
Hi, Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. I have two questions for you. One, are you planning to speak, to accept Congress's invitation to speak in front of them? And second, about cost plus 50, the plan that seems to be floating between the White House and the Pentagon to charge countries around the world the cost of stationing or U.S. troops there, plus 50%. I wanted to ask what you thought would be the effect of the U.S. asking its allies for more money to station U.S. troops on alliance stability, strength, and coherence. Thank you.
It is a great honor to be invited to speak to a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress. I am grateful for the bipartisan invitation to do so, and I will, of course, accept that invitation. I'm actually very much looking forward to speak to the Congress. That is a great opportunity for the whole of NATO, and it's a great recognition to all 29 allies and what we do together, and it shows that NATO is delivering and that we are doing more together, North America and Europe, than we have done for many years. On this media reports about a new model for cost sharing of bases, there has been no such proposals discussed in NATO. So this is only reports in the media. What I can say is that when it comes to the broader picture of burden sharing, we see that European allies are investing more, are increasing their defense budgets. All allies have stopped the cuts. All allies started to invest more, and that's actually a significant change, because before we were cutting billions, now we are adding billions to our defense budgets. So this is about the broader picture of burden sharing, and no such proposal about cost sharing for bases has been tabled on any table or any discussion inside NATO.
Okay, Reuters, first row.
Thank you. Robin, I'm at Reuters. Secretary General, what is your message to Germany, and specifically the German finance ministry, because we see that Germany is stuck in the latest report at 1.23%. That's at the lower end of the league table. And we've heard overnight some reports that the German finance ministry does not plan to accept the increasing defense spending for next year. Thank you.
So Germany has started to increase, has significantly added funds to their defense budgets over the last years. And again, we have Germany is also yet another example of a NATO ally, which not so many years ago actually reduced defense spending and now have started to increase defense spending. Second, Germany has made it clear that they will increase defense budgets by 2024 by 80%, and Germany has, together with all other allies, agreed to the defense investment pledge we all made together, first time in 2014, but since then it has been reiterated at different NATO summits, both in Warsaw in 2016 and in Brussels in 2018 last year. And of course, I expect all allies, including Germany, to make good on those promises. And we have to do that because it's in our security interests. Most allies were reducing defense spending during the 1990s after the end of the Cold War. Then tensions went down. And then it was actually understandable that allies reduced defense spending. But now tensions are going up, and then we have to increase defense spending again, because it is in our own security interest to do so. And on top of that, this is a clear NATO commitment, but it's something we should do anyway, because we need more capabilities and more investments in our security. Let me also add one more thing, that burden sharing is not only about cash. It's also about contributions to NATO missions and operations and capabilities. And Germany is contributing in many ways to our shared security. They are leading one of the battle groups in the Baltics in Lithuania. They have a significant presence in Afghanistan. They are doing air policing in the Baltics. They are leading the NATO activity, maritime presence in the Aegean Sea. So Germany is contributing to NATO in many different ways. And I welcome the fact that they are now stepping up and also increasing defense spending.
Deutsche Welle, NPR.
My two colleagues took all my questions, so I have to really dig deep now. On both of those, whether or not this bilateral issue between the U.S. and Germany or other European allies on its basis comes through NATO, what Michael asked and what's important is how it affects the alliance anyway. Even these discussions about European allies having to pay more for hosting troops that are also used by NATO, bases that are also used by NATO, surely has some impact, even if it's not brought up formally here. And on the Germans, is it enough that they're moving in the direction, as the Wales language is, moving in the direction of spending more by 2024? I mean, there are no numbers attached to that. There's not even a solemn binding pledge attached to the Wales language. So if the German budget increases, gets scaled back, as has been forecast, is that enough for you?
So first on this cost-sharing reports in the media about those new models for sharing the cost of basings. It is extremely difficult to comment on reports in the media, which are, you know, different reports almost weekly about different initiatives, proposals, which someone says is on the NATO table or are discussed within NATO, especially when they're not discussed within NATO. There has been no such proposal discussed in NATO. And therefore, it is very hard to start to comment on something which has not been an issue. What I can say is that, of course, the U.S. presence in Europe is important for NATO, but it's also important for the United States. It is part of our shared security, our collective defense. U.S. presence in Europe was reduced after the end of the Cold War, but now actually the United States and Canada are increasing their presence with more exercises, with more troops, with more investments in infrastructure, and I welcome that. And that's good for European security, but it's also good for the United States. The U.S. presence in Europe is also, of course, it's about protecting Europe, but it's also about projecting power beyond Europe, and all of this makes U.S. presence in Europe something which is important for the whole of NATO.
We had Swiss TV.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Well, the thing there is that Germany has, after years of cutting defense spending, started to increase and actually added a significant amount of money to the defense budgets. But I expect more. I expect further increase. And Germany has made it clear that they plan to further increase the defense spending. The figure they have shared with us is 80% increase in German defense spending, also from 2014 when we made the pledge until 2024. So we made the pledge for a decade.
Okay, Swiss TV radio.
Swiss Television, Thomas Miglierina. Secretary General, are you concerned by what is going on with the Brexit? If the countries of Europe don't get along well in Rue de la Loi, can they get along well in Boulevard Leopold III? And because you mentioned in your report that the importance of the hybrid threats, is NATO as such looking at the European elections from a security point of view with regard to possible interference and other things?
As the Brexit discussion is, of course, difficult. We all see that. It's a difficult and very important issue. For the UK, but also for the European Union, of course, this is important. I know, as a Norwegian, that discussions about membership in the European Union can be very difficult. We have had two referendums in Norway trying to join the European Union. I lost both of them. So I know that this is difficult. But it's not for NATO to have an opinion about Brexit. And I can also say that Brexit will change UK's relationship to the European Union, but Brexit will not change UK's relationship with NATO. UK will remain an important and strong ally. Actually, UK has the second largest defence budget in the alliance, just next to the United States, the biggest in Europe. And if anything, Brexit will only make NATO an even more important platform for bringing European and North American allies together. So I'm absolutely confident that the UK will continue as a very committed ally, regardless of what happens with Brexit. Yeah, but that's in a way the same, because, of course, the European elections are important. The European Union is an important organization. We work with the European Union. We have been able to lift the cooperation with the European Union to unprecedented levels. We will continue to do more of that on cyber, on hybrid, on maritime security, on the Aegean mission of NATO, helping to implement a deal on migration between Turkey and the European Union, and in many, many other areas. But again, Brexit will not change NATO's relationship to the European Union, and Brexit and the European elections are important, but they doesn't affect directly NATO.
My question was more on the question of interference and disinformation.
Oh, sorry, then I misunderstood the question. Now, we are, of course, following that as what we have done, or we have seen, of course, many reports, and I've seen many attempts to interfere in domestic political processes. That is always unacceptable. Regardless of how that is done, by hacking or by cyber attacks or by propaganda or in different ways, we are helping allies to increase the awareness. We are helping allies to increase cyber defenses. We are, of course, helping with intelligence, and we are working closely together to protect our democratic institutions, our democratic processes, and that's also the case, of course, for any elections in any NATO allied countries.
Okay, we'll go to George on TV.
Mr. Secretary General, how would you evaluate progress made by Georgia towards future membership in 2018? There are many challenges ahead of us, and also how can we strengthen the relationship in this year? What will be your main message before your visit to Georgia, to Georgian people? Thank you very much.
My main message is that Georgia is making progress. Georgia is coming closer to NATO, and we welcome the reforms and we welcome the efforts of Georgia to modernize its security and defense institutions. We welcome, of course, the support of Georgia to NATO, not least our mission in Afghanistan. At the same time, we also see the importance of increased presence of NATO in Georgia. With the Training and Evaluation Center, with the exercise that will take place later on this month. I'm looking forward to visit Georgia in connection with the exercise. But Georgia still has work to do when it comes to reforms, rule of law, and modernizing its defense institutions. So Georgia is a highly valued partner, and we continue to provide support to Georgia on its Euro-Atlantic integration.
Okay, James, second round.
Yes, Brooke Singer, Jane's Defense Weekly. Your statistics, coming back to the spending question, I mean, your statistics indeed show that there have been increases across the board, which is a good thing for the allies. But for many of the allies, 12 of them, I mean, they're closer to 1% than 2, and the increases are really tiny. These are tiny incremental increases from 2017 to 2018. At this rate, for many of them, including three major allies, Italy, Spain, and Germany, they're not going to make 2% by 2024 at this rate of increase. So why should we believe there's going to be an enormous leap between now and 2024? Thank you.
Well, what we have seen is a significant change because, as I've already stated, the trend in Europe and Canada was down, cutting billions every year. Now we are adding billions every year. And in total, just since 2016, NATO allies and Canada will have added 41 billion extra over those 2 years. And I expect that number to rise to 100 billion, the accumulated effect over those four years by next year. What we see is that when we made a decision, only three allies, also back in 2014 when we made the defense investment pledge, only three allies spent 2% of GDP on defense. Last year, seven allies spent 2% of GDP on defense, and Romania was extremely close. They actually had a budget allocating 2% of GDP for defense, but then GDP growth was stronger than expected, so they just slipped below the 2% target. I expect, of course, this to continue, and that allies will do even more in the coming years, and that's based partly on the very strong commitment and also the new sense of urgency we all saw at the NATO summit last year, but also on the fact that the majority of NATO allies have now provided plans, credible plans, on how to reach the 2% target. Not all have those plans in place yet, but even those who don't have those plans have started to make significant increases. So we have seen significant increase, but I call for and I expect more, because that is what all allies have agreed, and it's in the security interest of all allies to do so.
Europa Press. Yeah, lady over there, go, yeah. Next row, no? Next row, she's waving at you. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary General. So back on the expenditure, it's true that allies like Spain are still way below the 2% target, but they do insist that certain allies make a lot more contributions to operations and missions. I see that, we see that in the reports that you publish, we can't measure the contributions publicly of who puts what for operations and missions. So is this something that we need to work on as well? Because everybody is focused on the 2% target, and especially President Trump, but not the rest. And going back on the cost plus 50, I mean, from the outside, if this proposal were to be true, it sounds quite worrying, because already President Trump has been very critical in a very vocal and sometimes, well, not a very nice way towards allies with bearing up the cost. Is this something that you will want to wish to clarify when you visit the Congress? Or you just think that unless US puts this on the table, NATO will not interfere? Thank you.
First of all, we are also measuring contributions, but there are not one figure encompassing all contributions. In this report, we have also figures for both defense spending, but also contributions of different NATO allies to different missions and operations. There's a list for contributions to our mission in Afghanistan, in Kosovo, and elsewhere. But the character of the missions and contributions are very different. So you find a lot of information also about contributions and capabilities in this report. So I think that's then on the United States. The United States is committed to NATO, and President Trump has clearly stated that he is committed to NATO. He did that at the summit last year. He did it. Recently in one of his statements. He did it in the State of the Union speech to the Congress. This is not only words, but also in actions, because actually the United States is doing more together with European allies now than not so many years ago. At the same time, the United States expects fair burden sharing in NATO. But that's something we all agree on, the need for fair burden sharing. I expect European allies to invest more.
Go to the Ukrainian media in the third row there. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Irina Sommer, news agency Interfax Ukraine. Here are actually two questions. On Washington meeting, will it be family-only meeting, or NATO also will invite partners, particularly Georgia and Ukraine? And second question, can Ukraine expect in this year to receive from NATO Enhanced Opportunity Program or even MAP? And how possibly the result of upcoming presidential election can influence on the decision in this area? Thank you.
The foreign ministerial meeting in Washington will be for the 29 allies. This is a very short meeting. It's only actually half a day. And then we have the day before the actual meeting, we will have a reception and we will have a way to celebrate the 70th anniversary. To that event, we will also invite representatives from the different partner countries, and there will also be other public events in connection with the foreign ministerial meetings where we invite representatives from different countries outside the alliance. When it comes to Ukraine, I think we have already in place many different tools and a national program. We have the NATO-Ukraine Commission. We have the different partnerships, activities. So we have already in place a lot of tools that can be used to strengthen our partnership and help Ukraine move towards Euro-Atlantic integration.
At Kabul Times, so the lady, third row up.
Thank you, Leila Mossadegh from Kabul Times. I didn't see actually the report, but I'm sure there is mentioned something about Afghanistan. So I would like to ask about peace negotiation regarding to long discussion and meetings since more than 2 weeks in Qatar between U.S. and also Taliban. So they decided to withdraw U.S. troops in Afghanistan. What is the role of NATO troops in Afghanistan after this, and how can NATO promote peace in Afghanistan? Thank you.
First of all, it is a lot of information about Afghanistan in the report. We actually have a chapter on projecting stability and how we are working, for instance, in Afghanistan to help to stabilize the country and to fight terrorism. And we have also statistics related to different NATO allies and partners contributing, for instance, troops to the NATO rescue support mission. NATO strongly supports the peace efforts. We welcome the talks that are taking place between the United States and Taliban. This is closely coordinated and consulted with NATO allies. Ambassador Khalilzad, the chief negotiator, he has been at NATO several times. We have close contact with him. General Miller, the supreme the commander for the NATO forces in Afghanistan, he visited the NATO headquarters recently, also was present during the negotiations in Doha. So this is very closely consulted, the process, the peace process with all NATO allies. Because this is, of course, important for the whole NATO alliance. We have been there together for 17 years. Of course, there is a lot of U.S. troops, but we also have a lot of non-U.S. troops in the rescue support NATO mission in Afghanistan. We went in together, and we will make decisions on our future posture presence in Afghanistan together. We are there to create the conditions for peace. We are in Afghanistan to send a clear message to Taliban that they will not win on the battlefield. They have to sit down at the negotiating table. And I really believe that what we see now is a result of the efforts of NATO allies over years, both our military presence, our trained assist and advice mission, but also our financial support to the Afghan army and security force. And that has created the conditions for the peace efforts we now see. So we will support them. And then depending, of course, on the outcome of these talks, that will then create a basis for any decisions about future presence. But it's too early to preempt the outcome of the talks, simply because they haven't been finalized. There's still much to be done before we have a peace deal in place. Yes, we will be in Afghanistan and we continue to provide support, both the train, assist and advice mission, and also continue to provide financial support. So we provide trainers and also financial support. We have actually made a new pledge to continue to provide support until 2024. We did that at the NATO summit in July. But the troop levels, the, of course, depends on the outcome on of the negotiations. But we are extremely focused on that. We have to make sure that we don't, that we maintain the gains we have made. We are in Afghanistan to prevent Afghanistan forever again becoming a safe haven for international terrorists. And of course, that's one of the key issues which are now negotiated and addressed in the talks between with Taliban. So whether we will, also, the future force level of NATO troops is very much dependent on, of course, the outcome of those talks.
NRK?
Okay, one question about IS. Countries like Belgium and Norway have suggested that there is international tribunals set up to bring jihadis and foreign fighters that have traveled to Iraq and Syria to bring them to justice. Is this something that NATO would support?
So NATO allies and NATO has played a key role in fighting Daesh, and we have made enormous progress. Daesh controlled a territory as big as the United Kingdom, 8 million people, only a few years ago. Now they hardly control any territory at all. Daesh is still a challenge and a threat, and the fight is not over, but at least they don't control territory as they did until not so long time ago. We are addressing the issue of foreign fighters. We exchange intelligence. We also do different activities to make sure that we try to have the best possible, or should I say, knowledge and intelligence about foreign fighters who are returning to Europe. But it's not. But how to deal with them when they, or if they come back, and how to take them back, and especially the families, that's not a NATO issue. That's a law enforcement issue, so that's something which is discussed by NATO allies, but not within the NATO context, because it's a law enforcement issue.
I go to Süddeutsche Zeitung over there, the fourth row over there. No, sorry, fourth row over there at the top. Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. It's actually Martin Kay with a Danish newspaper, Jyllandsposten. Never mind, I'll take the question. As you know, construction work is still being carried out on the Russian pipeline, Nord Stream 2. And I know you've said several times that allies have different opinions on this pipeline. However, I would still like to ask you whether you think that this pipeline will increase European NATO allies' dependence on Russia. And if you think this is might be a potential security threat to these NATO allies?
NATO is an organization which is responsible for collective defense, for making sure that the NATO allies can operate and work together. We are also, of course, addressing the issue of energy security. We have highlighted the importance of diversification of supply to increase the resilience of our energy systems. But NATO does not have an opinion on Nord Stream 2. And as I've said before, NATO allies have different views on that. And therefore, I also strongly believe that if I, as a Secretary General, started to have some kind of private opinion about that, that would be totally wrong. I'm the Secretary General of NATO, and when I talk on behalf of NATO. So, so that's the answer.
Okay, we'll go to the lady over there.
Thank you. Alexandra Bzhozovsky from Euractiv. Mr. Stoltenberg, there have been reports that U.S. General Scaparotti warned yesterday that NATO forces would stop communicating with German colleagues if Berlin would team up with Huawei for its 5G telecom infrastructure. Can you comment on this?
We are now consulting closely on this issue, including on the security aspects of investments in 5G networks. I know that this is something which is addressed in many NATO capitals, and it is an issue which is partly a trade and an economic issue, but also has potential security implications. So we will now consult, we will assess, the issue and find out how NATO as an alliance can in the best possible way address the challenges related to investments in 5G infrastructure. So that's what I can say now.
Okay. Imedi? Rustavi, sorry.
Rustavi, too. A few days ago, Russian militaries kidnapped Georgian citizen and he died in a very strange circumstances in occupied Abkhazia in the custody. So how do you estimate such kind of situations? Because it's not first time and we all know Otkhozoria Tatunashvili's cases. And how can we prevent such kind of situations?
Well, NATO provides strong support to Georgia, to Georgia's territorial integrity, to its sovereignty, and of course that includes also the right for Georgia to protect all Georgian citizens. I cannot go into the specifics of that example, but in general I can just say that what we have seen is that Russia is violating the integrity of Georgia, partly by recognizing the so-called republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, but also by supporting that this borderline is constantly moved. And we are also seeing other different aggressive actions against Georgia and Georgian citizens. So for us, this is just yet another example of why NATO provides significant support to Georgia.
Okay, gentleman over there.
Nikos Xolaras, Bloomberg News. Can I come back to this question of 5G? You said that you are assessing the threat. Is there a time frame about when this assessment will be completed? Is there a chance that NATO will recommend to allies to ban Chinese companies from 5G procurement? And does NATO have any evidence of state-sponsored cyber attacks from China?
This is a very important issue, and therefore I will not speculate so much about the potential outcomes of the assessments and discussions which are now going on in different NATO countries. What you all have seen is that some NATO allies have expressed their concerns over Huawei and their role in providing 5G infrastructure. And, of course, NATO takes these concerns very seriously. That's also the reason why we will continue to consult, continue to assess, and look into whether NATO has a role to play in addressing the security aspects related to this kind of infrastructure. Regardless of this, NATO has significantly stepped up our efforts when it comes to cyber defense and cybersecurity. So we are providing, you know, we conduct big exercises, we increase awareness, we share best practices, we help to strengthen the resilience of infrastructure, cyber networks for all allies, including, of course, our own networks. But it's too early to say anything about the outcome of the consultations which are going on now.
This concludes this press conference. Of course, you're invited to our annual reception, which will be on background. So please follow the signs.
Thank you.